All right. Sorry for the screw up. You know, this is what happens when I try to do stuff by myself. So you listened into a conversation I had with the superintendent up in Triton. That's what we're trying to do. We do want to promote the class of 2020. Nothing that was untoward there, and we are doing that. We'll be doing some more today. We've got a couple of we have one up there already as we talk with the Newburyport director of athletics yesterday, and we're going to be putting up an interview from Gloucester this today as well later on. So let me get the interview here with James Cook, the Gloucester High School principal, and then we'll be checking in with Bill, who's going to give me what for keeping the mic open here, and then we'll chat with Bill and Josh here in just a little while. So we'll be back, and actually, we're going to go to Mr. Cook's interview right now. This is Connections here on MSO, kind of a sloppy job by me, but you can withstand it. Here we go.
North Shore.
We're back now with Gloucester High School Principal James Cook, a shit of mine and a colleague. And James, nothing like being thrust into the middle of a fire, I guess.
You got it. Yeah, there are daily challenges, you know, as there is, you know, fighting a fire, as there is dealing with, you know, things that are unplanned. You're looking at what resources you have. You're looking at, you know, what do we already do that we can scale learning, meeting kids' basic needs, since we are a touchstone for so many of the kids, in supporting them. So in all different ways, you know, we're responding to a host of situations. But I've got a great staff here, you know, dedicated teachers and counselors and special education liaisons, you know, English learner teachers and coordinators and so on. So we're really all hands on deck to meet these needs.
The overall transition to where you are now in terms of the physical plant being closed and teachers reaching out to their students online, can you give me a sort of an overview as to what is going on and maybe what the requirements are, that kind of thing? Because obviously, this is new territory for everybody.
Sure. Yeah. No. It's a good question. So we've had two phases of this, right? When we first went into closure on March 13th for us, we started phase one, which was a voluntary remote learning situation. So teachers created remote learning opportunities. And we linked to those through a school-wide remote learning page. So you'd go to the remote learning page, you check out, okay, I'm looking for my English class, and then you link to your particular English teacher and those opportunities. A lot of teachers during that time where, you know, through guidelines from DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, things were optional. Folks built up a repertoire of, say, learning how to use Google Classroom. Math teachers were starting to use Khan Academy, for example, and we started developing expertise with different tools so that when the Commissioner of Education shifted us into a phase two, where there would at least be some requirements for students to receive credit, we were ready to use that front page we created with now two mostly Google Classrooms, where you know, virtually teachers have their classroom and their learning using Zoom and Google Meets, which is like Zoom, to, you know, meet with kids and provide support for them, you know, through the Google Classroom page. We were ready by the time that you know, the required for credit learning started to happen. And then in just in terms of volume, you know, we've cut back significantly to usually it's like one lesson per week, right, that we can engage all students in, and then move slowly, making sure we're supporting kids. At Gloucester, we have about half of our students are what are called high-needs students, so economically disadvantaged, English learners, special education students. And so, you know, we need to make sure, even in this remote environment, we're supporting all kids. That comes down to technology, as well as many other support needs kids have during the mm-hmm. the closure.
I think it would be easy to ask you what are some of the difficulties. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to ask you in turn, What are some of the positive feedbacks that you have gotten either from students or from staff or from maybe parents or other community members? Because this is something that the entire world is going through. So it's not specific to Gloucester. This is an absolute historic event. But there have been good things that have developed out of this, whether it's been kids coming up with great ideas or teachers being creative or, you know, involvement of community members. So, James, I'm just wondering if you can tell me one or two things that you have found is a real something unexpectedly good that we weren't really thinking was going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's actually hard to limit it to one or two positive things, as difficult as it's been. I would say that some of the positive things are the way teachers and also support staff, counselors, right, like a adjustment counselor, having meetings through Zoom and Google Meets with kids, teaching a class that way and connecting with kids who would otherwise, without us, if this were happening just over the summer, would be so isolated that they're able to connect and still receive their counseling, still receive, you know, an education where they're connecting to their kids in virtual ways. We've expanded the understanding and expertise in that area many, many fold. And that's something that we'll be able to use in all environments with kids who have, say, a great number of absences. And in all ways, we now have capacity technologically and know-how in these using these tools that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And then there are just some amazing stories about kids who are working, you know, who are getting, because of Wi-Fi issues at home, or getting paper packet deliveries, but then borrowing someone's phone to take a picture of the work they've done and sending that into their teacher, being real resilient in engaging with us. So it's like the teacher kind of resourcefulness and resilience and creativity and presenting learning opportunities for kids and supporting kids. And then, you know, on the other hand, kids who are finding a way to, you know, to continue to learn and continue to stay connected with us. Those are some, you know, I could get into all sorts of details, but those are kind of the heart. Those are things at the end of a long, and these are long days, believe me, at the end of that long day, you look and say, this kid reached out and thanked us, you know, for the connection we've made. This teacher has come up with an innovative way to meet a need. And to convey their content. Those are the great things at the end of the day.
I hear the pride in your voice when speaking of staff and students, and it is fabulous, James. And I want to ask you one final sort of a general question. This is on the minds of people I know anecdotally in terms of the seniors who are more or less being robbed of something that they look forward to, I think. And I think, you know, it's kind of weird academically. I don't think it's that big a deal, if I may say that boldly, in terms of seniors, because their careers are pretty much all set. Those who are going on to college, you know, they've done it. They're ready to go. Those who are going into other fields, sort of the same thing. But the social aspect of being a senior, looking forward to getting those little perks that, you know, these kids have seen since they were freshmen, a little bit bothersome in terms of the fact that, hey, wait a minute, either this is going to be postponed or we don't get to do it at all. So maybe just kind of an overview again of how the senior class is doing from your perspective.
Sure, yeah. You know, as I've said to lots of people, it hit kids hard last week when, you know, the governor made his announcement that schools would be canceled in the physical presence of schools through the end of the school year. And so, you know, kids turned to each other and to staff members, to coaches. Maybe they're missing out on a season, and real kind of had to come together to, support each other through this difficult time and realization of the situation. Lots of kids, you know, really have pivoted from the middle of last week on to representing the three ideas that we have about the end of the year for seniors. And those ideas are, first, we're going to honor and we're going to celebrate this class. It's just a matter of how can we do it. So that's, you know, we're going to honor them and we will be celebrating this class. And then the second principle is that we need to solicit as much feedback as we possibly can about how to do that. So we're really listening to lots of people about what's important to them. That at Gloucester High School, we have the tradition of the senior sweatshirt, for example. right? That's a big deal. You get all the names of the kids on the sweatshirt, and you know, making sure things like that can still happen despite this. So it's not just the big events, but some of the littler things as well. Honoring kids, celebrating them first, and then soliciting feedback on like what is most important to you, what are your ideas about how to do that in the current environment. And then third, anything we plan, you know, has to fit in with the state and local guidelines to keep us all safe. You know, and that's something that, you know, any of the other ideas has to, you know, abide by that part. So kids have really, you know, the student leaders have really rolled up their sleeves to come up with ideas for how to honor and celebrate their classmates. And then they've also reached out for feedback from parents and from the students themselves for that. So that's where we are right now is how can we turn this is going to be something special. You know, this is going to be something they all remember. Yes, there's loss here, but there's also they will be this class, right? The class of 2020. Nobody else will get to say that they were the seniors this year, and it will be something unique and something that will hopefully bring us all together who experience this together.
That is James Cook, the principal of Gloucester High School. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. All righty then, we are back. This is Connections. I am Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell and Josh Arnold. We're going to bring the boys in now. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Rick, and good morning, Josh.
Morning, Bill. Good morning, Rick.
Well, mostly an education program here this morning, I guess, talking with Triton Superintendent of Schools, Brian Forgett, and with Gloucester High School's James Cook. But so much more going on in the community. And, Bill, what's on your mind? What are you looking at?
Well, I just thought I'd react to what Superintendent Forgett had to say. I mean, it speaks to the, you know, there's a district like Triton, which, you know, as you mentioned with him, is a K through 12 district, or pre through K 12 district, I should say, pre K through 12 district. And the amount of work that they're doing, you know, that they didn't used to do, and the things that they're doing now that, again, they didn't do before, is really kind of amazing. So you look at that almost school by school, district by district, city by city, town by town, and then you go to the state and you go to the federal level. There's just an incredible amount of work that's being done that wasn't being done 8 weeks ago. Just it's been amazing what's happened here. And, you know, hopefully we're turning the corner a little bit here. That's what it appears like.
Well, you know, you were both a teacher and an administrator, Bill, and I wonder what goes through your head in terms of trying to sort this thing out, because I'm just thinking as a former teacher, good Lord, how do I translate what I do in a classroom with individual kids, with a classroom as a whole, as a group? How do you translate that into, you know, something that goes into a computer on one end and they pick it up on the other? And I just don't know how these guys are doing it.
Well, you know, every family has their own challenges, and even his family, which appears to be a family of four, two adults, two children, two adults working from home, working off their laptops, two children needing to be on some kind of device to do their schoolwork. Now, in reality, you know, that's probably a very good situation to be in. You got two people working, you got two kids, you know, with the supervision to get work done. But yet, on the other hand, you have other families. But that in itself, as he explained, is so very challenging at times, because our teachers asking you to be there at 9 o'clock when your dad or mom might be doing a Zoom call at 9 o'clock for their job. I mean, how, you know, what are the priorities? So he actually had some very interesting things to say about how they can structure learning so it's not on the clock, so to speak. Districts or schools are all doing it differently. And then on the other hand, you have certainly districts where students may not have computer access, may not have the support in the home, do have multiple children in homes, don't have multiple devices, all of those challenges as well, which are the obvious challenges that you think of. But it just goes to show that everybody's life with children is complicated times 10, I think, with this pandemic.
Exactly. Josh, good morning.
Good morning. You know, we look at different situations in life. You know, the Jeep. Where did the Jeep come from? The Jeep is a car we drive around, and we take it for granted that we've always had Jeeps. But Jeeps were designed for World War II for difficult terrain, and then they came home and people liked them, and we evolved from a crisis of a war and began using Jeeps as a recreational and regular transportation vehicle, and I use I use that analogy because I'm wondering to what extent we shift gears and we build an economy and a set of practices that is completely different or very varied than what we would have done 8 weeks ago as a basis of the adjustments you have to make along the way. I listened to the education interviews, and what was popping through my mind was, are there, when you're doing a Zoom classroom, are there apt to be what they call a teacher's moment, where the teacher or the student or something, a phenomenon comes up and you drift off the original plan, but it's an important moment and you stay with it. Is that less apt to happen now or more apt to happen now? What are the adjustments that we're going to make at every phase of our lives that becomes an industry, that becomes a new set of products, that becomes a new reality? I mean, is the reality of the future that no child does, pencils and crayons were standard supplies? Does every kid have to have a laptop? Is that a basic thing that everybody has to have? And it may be. That may be how we change gears. It may change the dynamic of education from what we've known it for years to what it's going to be in the future.
I want to point out something, guys, if I may, from Discover Gloucester. There's a great big headline that says, Happy Mother's Day. And it says, during this most difficult time, now more than ever, it's incredibly important that we make connections with all those super moms out there, talking about moms at home, working and working with the kids as well, while keeping the required amount of social distancing intact. Here is a list of shops doing business through online orders. Now, this is from Discover Gloucester. So if you go to Discover Gloucester, you will find Beth Williams' new virtual studio. You will find Toodaloo's. Now, Toodaloo's are open Tuesday through Saturday for phone orders, and that's a kids' store for puzzles, coloring books, games, and all that kind of stuff. So if moms are interested in keeping the little ones occupied, there's something called Castaway Vintage Cafe's Fresh Fruit and Veggie Packages. I have no idea what this is, but you can find that out on the website. Arts Abound of Magnolia, Cape Ann Olive Oil Company. I actually go by that every day on my walk, and they are open right on Main Street in Gloucester. So if you go to the discovergloucester.com website, you will see that are open for curbside, and some of them are actually open for you to go into.
You know, going back to Josh's point about the Jeep and how things have changed, I think maybe we go to the grocery store, you buy milk, you buy eggs, paper towels, toilet paper, whatever. You know, now face masks probably are going to be something that people are going to be buying now, because JetBlue, I think, just came out with a thing in the last 24 hours. I heard the news story that they have a plan to get people back onto their planes, and it involves face masks for everyone. And it used to be years ago, the only profession that would use face masks were bank robbers. Now that's all changed.
Yeah, that's right. Hey,
well, have you seen the little cartoon sayings going on? I never thought I'd see the day when I'd put a mask on and go to a bank teller and ask for money.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, Josh, do you know where the word Jeep comes from?
I do not, but you're going to tell me, I'm sure.
I am, because that's part of my job as your teacher here. Jeep, the vehicle was called a GP, general purpose. And so needless to say, in the Army, you use acronyms whenever you can, so it was called a GP, which shortened to become Jeep, GP, Jeep.
And there
then
you
it,
go.
And then it was,
I know that.
Then the spelling was changed.
Jeep was originally to be a fortress to get advanced the troops in World War One over the trenches, so they would just follow the trench, the tank, to get into enemy territory, and then it evolved from there. But I think you're going to see our economy evolve too in some ways. For example, the meatpacking plants. we're going to come in with a whole new set of regulations on what is acceptable for processing meat. There's everything, every facet of this, of our daily lives and our experiences, from food acquisition to economics, is going to change in some way, and probably for the better. Some of it will be at a cost, but it's definitely going to change, and what we had last December probably isn't going to exist anymore for the foreseeable future.
Bill, you've been monitoring the governor's press conferences, and you post them every day on our website, and I've been reading that obviously some places in some states, some communities, and even the governor, I think, mentioned it, you know, everybody's in different places, and some places might be able to get back online business-wise, but it doesn't seem like the governor's inclined to do that anytime soon, does it?
No, I don't think so in Massachusetts. I mean, but again, even in Massachusetts, it could be a regional thing where I imagine there are towns in Massachusetts where there aren't many cases. Manchester by the Sea, for example, 12 cases as of last week. Lynn, what was it, 1,600 cases I cited today? By the way, I got to tell you, this, I listened to the newscast, Rick, just before the Connection show, and I have to be honest that there was a mistake in the newscast because I said this. I shouldn't share this, but I am going to share this. So I said Lynn, superintendent of schools, wants to start schools earlier in September this year. Lynn always starts after Labor Day, but he wants to start. So I said that he wanted to have students come back September 1st and teachers
yes.
come back September 2nd.
I caught that, yeah. You know what? Why not? Let's give it a shot.
it's probably about what's going on now.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so why not?
I got a chuckle out of that. And that's, you know, consider what I did today, that's a nothing burger. But you're right. And, yeah, generally, I think most people understood that. As I was listening, I'm thinking, why not? Let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens.
The kids come back a day ahead of the teachers.
There you go.
Yeah, you know,
it'll be fun for
see how it goes.
Yeah,
save a few bucks.
Well, as someone once said, what do you got to lose?
Yeah, the kids just have to be in school. The kids just have to be in school 180 days. It's somehow we've just felt that the teachers had to be there too. But maybe this Bill Newell is on something here to save some money.
Yeah, we'll have a statue of you in some square. All right, that's excellent. Josh, what else you got in mind here? I think we probably should wrap this thing up here pretty soon.
Well, I just think that it's an interesting to sit back and watch. Not that we're all sitting around doing nothing, but to observe everybody in action and how it's changing our lives it's a lot of different things. I'm anxious to get out in the garden. I get most of it, three-quarters of it turned over the weekend. And I think the other thing that's on my mind is I want to see, assuming that it gets, I mean, it's here it is, a few days from May, and it was 38 degrees the last time I looked outside.
Yeah.
I don't get why we had such a warm winter and such a cold spring, and I'm wondering when summer is going to come or if it's going to come. And if it, assuming it does, once we get 60 or 70 degree temperature on a sustained level, does that then impact positively or negatively the flow of the virus? And I think that's what everybody's kind of holding their breath because they're not sure. Because what happens what will happen in Massachusetts when that temperature goes up is people will move around more. So people who will visit their summer places in places that Manchester, Gloucester, others that are along the sea where people go for the summer may see a bump. And we don't know what that's going to do yet.
I tell you,
I think the governor is rightfully cautious about how much optimism to have until some of the other variables come into play.
I got to tell you, I had my first virtual doctor's appointment today, and it was with I was wondering how this was going to go because it was with my dermatologist, and we did a FaceTime thing, and I was able to show using the phone's camera. I was able to show what need to be diagnosed and so on. And it was pretty interesting, and it was pretty consistent with my in clinic visits. And that was surprising to me. It took about 15 minutes, and it was what I expected, but it worked pretty well. So I guess that's what'd you call that? The new reality, the new normal.
And you said you had the perfect face for radio, right?
Well, fortunately, we didn't have to use my face. So, yeah, exactly. Bill, final thoughts?
No, I'm trying to think of something, but I better not say it, so I won't.
Oh, thank you.
I'm fine. Yeah,
I bit my tongue too on the medical visit, but yeah.
Yeah, it's probably enough said. Yeah, but that's that. Well, I do think that is a new reality. I mean, in fact, they've Josh is always passing legislation along to us, but I think there was an order from the governor that allows offices to charge for phone calls. Normally in the past they couldn't do that,
right.
I guess. I may be wrong on certain health plans or mass health or whatever, but now they're allowed to charge for phone calls, knowing that they could be very important and that they're very similar to telehealth, which is something that can charge for. So just a little minutia. Josh, I thought you'd appreciate that. So there you go.
I do. Yeah, thank you.
Well, it seemed like an office visit to me, and I expect to be billed for it, of course. And I was, you know, the diagnosis was consistent with what I've been through before. Want to point out, guys, we have this Connections program every day, and tomorrow, hopefully, I will be talking with Tony Beadle, who is the CEO of the Shilin Liu Performance Center up in Rockport. They still have stuff going on, by the way. And of course, it's virtual, it's online, and so on. And Bill, you'll have a guest as well.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Brian Lapierre, Councilor at Large, City of Lynn, and get an update from him on Lynn. A lot of news out of Lynn, actually, as I mentioned earlier. A lot of cases, a lot of information there. And Brian actually does a daily update on LynnTV.org. You want to check that out, and we'll talk with Brian it'll be in the show tomorrow. Plus, later on this week, State Rep Lori Ehrlich and Lisa Dana, the Superintendent of Schools of Danvers, and State Senator Diane DeSaglio. All that and a lot more coming up this week on Connections.
Absolutely. And Josh, what do you have lined up?
Still working on some stuff, but hopefully we'll have a city councilor from Gloucester on a day very soon. And don't forget that when you talk to Brian Lapierre, his wife's birthday is today.
Oh, great. That sounds good.
All right. There you go. Okay.
Lori Ehrlich has a Bichon. There you go. Some trivia for you to know.
All right, that makes our week, I guess. All right, so that's Josh Charnel, Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky. This has been a little bit of a disjointed Connections because of me, but thank you for joining us. We'll be back on Wednesday as well. Everybody stay safe and do the right thing. This is Connection on msonewsports.com.